Hello and welcome to the Raising Kellen podcast. My name is Marsh Naidu and I blog at raisingkellen.org, where we curate resources for parents raising children with disabilities. As always, remember the content on this podcast is for your information only, and if you seek advice for your specific situation, to always contact a trained professional. October is observed as National Disability Employment Awareness Month. It educates the public about disability employment issues, as well as celebrates the contribution made by persons with disabilities. I can't think of anyone better to observe this month with than Nave Eldar, host of the Landscape Podcast, a podcast that highlights people and programs changing the landscape for persons with disabilities. Not only is Nave a podcast host, but he works within the healthcare industry and was instrumental in implementing a project search together with a team at his facility located in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Project Search is a year-long transitional program once a person with disability completes high school. I interviewed Erin Riley, co-founder of the program, on episode 89 of the Raising Kellen podcast, and Nave actually interviewed the other co-founder, Susie Rautowski, on season 1, episode 1 of his podcast. It will be well worth your time listening to these two episodes, as well as episode 17 of season 2, where Nave interviews David and Caleb Bubak, two students of Project Search that are now working at West Tennessee Healthcare in Jackson, Tennessee. So onward and upward, grab that cup of coffee, put your feet up, and get ready for some awesome conversation. Welcome to the podcast, Nave.
Thank you. Thank you. It's really, really great to be here.
Just to give you guys a brief visual description, my name is Marsh Naidu. I'm a female with short black hair, brown skin, and I'm wearing a blue t-shirt today.
My name is Nave Eldar. I am a brown 53-year-old, completely shaved bald male with a very short trimmed white beard, wearing elegant reading glasses.
Well, listen, not only are you a podcast host, you wear many hats, including working in the disability employment realm, which I would love for you to get into. But before we delve into that, can you just give us a little bit about your background history?
Oh, wow. That's a big question. Yes. So like you said, my name is Nave Eldar, and I am originally from Ohio, Akron, Ohio, to be specific, and went to university up in Cleveland. And, you know, as soon as I graduated, I got my first job down here in Tennessee. My brother was, he was in medical school at the time. You know, I was this, you know, young 20-something year old, just graduated and didn't want to be at home with mom, right? So I left the state of Ohio and came down and found a job here pretty quick. And I always wanted to be in some type of work that was impacting people's lives. And when I was very young, like when I entered university, I thought that that was going to be like troubled youth. It's what spoke to me. But then when I graduated, I got a job working with an agency called the Oasis Center in Nashville, which worked with foster kids. And now they work with a lot of street youth and so forth. And so I got to do what I planned to do, but at the same time, I started working with individuals with a severe and persistent mental illness, and actually with a geriatric group. So they were like older. And remember, this is like the early 90s. And so, so I started working with that population, and, you know, and I just fell in love with the disability community. There was just not a lot of, I like to use the word, aspiration around that community. You know, it was just expected that this is where you're going to be, and this is how your life is going to be. You're going to forever be a part of the system that's just taking care of you. And, you know, there was just so much more light in them, and so much more potential in them. And so, you know, I just liked doing what I could to bring it out. And so I worked with that population for a while. I moved on to case management with individuals with mental illness. And then I moved on to it led me to an agency called Park Center, which is also in Nashville, Tennessee. And I was over this is probably way more information than you wanted.
No, but please, I would love to listen.
So I was over they had three different programs. One was for individuals with a dual diagnosis, which in the mental health world is a mental health diagnosis and a drug addiction. And I say that because in the intellectual and developmental disability world, a dual diagnosis is an IDD and a mental health diagnosis. So it means different things in different populations of people. So that we had three different programs, and I was the supervisor of a program of individuals who just needed more intense interventions. And so we were smaller, we could give more attention to individuals. You know, we could give more attention to like individual goals and things like that. Well, that program was eventually closed and kind of combined with one of the bigger programs. And so the CEO came to me and she said, well, if you want to remain a supervisor, I was a supervisor at the time, the only supervisory position we have available is employment, supported employment. And so, you know, I had two small kids at the time, who are now 20 and 22, which is crazy. I was like, I have to feed my family. So I had never directly done support employment, but I'm like, yeah, I'm here for it. And so this is where I'm going to get on my soapbox a little bit. So every job I had had up to that point was our goal was to quote unquote work our way out of a job and to just improve individuals' lives so much that they didn't need us anymore, right? But the truth of the matter was, every job I had, all we did was try to maintain stability or prevent crisis. That's truthfully what we were doing, right? So like metrics that we were measuring was, when I was a case manager, is are we keeping people out of the hospital? Which is a great goal, right? But that isn't improving somebody's life. It's just making sure that they don't regress and need to go into the hospital, right? In psychosocial rehabilitation program at Park Center, you know, they came to groups, they came to, you know, we had psychosocial groups and activities, and people could be there for decades. Like literally, they could be coming to our groups for decades. So there wasn't a ton of progress. And so what it took a month or two in support employment to see how vastly employment changed somebody's life. And so it was like mind-boggling to me. It was amazing. And it was like everything that I'd ever wanted. And so I really dove into you know, what are the best ways we can do this? Can we improve our methods and things like that? And so that's what led me on the path to support employment, was that literally, you know, people that were homeless can now get an apartment. People that may had a child that was embarrassed because they could never get a birthday present can now buy them birthday presents. Self-esteem went up, symptoms went down, just across the board. So that's what led me to support employment. And that was a very, very long road to get there.
Ray, I'm going to go ahead and build on that a little bit more, because on one of your episodes, you spoke to an organization called APSPE. Can you tell us a little bit about what that organization does?
Yeah, so APSE is the Association for People Supporting Employment First. So Employment First is this belief, right, that any individual has the capacity to work. Because previously, I shouldn't even say previously, because it still goes on today, even with professionals whose job it is to work with people with disabilities, there's still pockets of people who believe this person isn't capable of working. And so Employment First says, if a person tells you that they want to work in any way, even if it's non-verbally, if they tell you that they want to work, we believe that there's a job out there that they can do. Right. They may need supports for it. They may need, accommodations for it, but they can work. And so that's what the Employment First model is. And I'm very proud and surprised to say, so when this came out, Governor Haslam was the first in the country to sign that Tennessee was going to become an Employment First state. Like systematically. And so there's like a governor's Employment First task force, which brings together like all these groups, you know, from Vanderbilt to vocational rehabilitation to, provider agencies, you name it, to the table to figure out, to your point, what can we put in place from a governmental or from a systems point of view to help people get jobs that are interested in working. So APSE is literally an organization that's dedicated specifically to Employment First. And there's an APSE, I don't know if there's an APSE in every state, but there is an APSE of Tennessee, and there's an APSE in most states. And then there's like a national umbrella APSE as well, which is who I believe I had on the show. And it's been a few years since that episode. So I would have to go back in my catalog, but I'm pretty sure I talked to like a couple people from the national team of APSE. And they have a convention every year, which brings together, thought leaders and, to have sessions on, what are we doing? How can we push this forward? And so it's a combination of supporting advocacy to, changing policies to what are best practices that need to be put in place.
Neva, there was an episode that you had on as well that talked about Project Search. Yeah. And that was with one of the co-founders, Susie Rautowski. And guys, I'm going to give you a little homework. We don't normally do this, but go and listen to episode number 2 on the Landscape podcast. And then you can double back and listen to episode 89 on mine, where I talked to the other co-founder, Erin Riley. But Project Search is a program that high school students can do on the last year of school. It actually removes them to a offsite location. And they are actually trained, I believe, in about up to 3 different jobs at that work site. And that gives them that work experience to where they could then use as a resume builder and apply for other jobs that they may have relevant skills for in meaningful integrated employment. Nave, tell me a little bit about Project Search and your experience.
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite it's one of my favorite programs in the world, to be honest about it. The outcomes of Project Search is phenomenal. It's like between 80% and 90% of the graduates go on to integrated competitive employment. And I'm going to use those few words. And for your listeners who don't know, there are jobs that are set aside for people with disabilities, that are jobs that don't allow growth, that start you at minimum wage, or some states it's still legal to pay sub-minimum wage to people with disabilities. And so Project Search doesn't allow any of that. It has to be, a competitive job that's in the community that anybody else could apply for or get. And so I work for a managed care organization now. I was brought on to be their employment specialist. That was a few positions ago for me now. I'm in a different position now. But at that time, I just love who we are as a company, because nobody's perfect. Like, is if you think of a company, it's the same as a person. Like, we all grow, we all learn, we all have things that we haven't been exposed to. And so they always want it to be an inclusive company, but they don't know, like, what does that mean on every level? Like, when if you look at my social media presence, especially when I was doing the podcast more, I haven't had time to do it in, and I don't remember when my last episode was, probably a year ago or so. I use the hashtag disability is diversity. And the reason being that many times, you know, diversity and inclusion is very prevalent in companies' culture now, but many times they don't think about the disability community in that equation. But yeah, and so that's, you know, and that's changing. And so, you know, we were kind of in that position. And so when you know, we started serving, when we had a program now in-house that was serving Tennesseans that had intellectual and developmental disabilities, it brought our consciousness as a company to the disability community more. And so we were like, well, what can we do? And so the way Project Search works, you, like I said, go listen to your episode on it, go listen to my episode, because you'll listen to the two founders that are from Cincinnati, Ohio on it. So we decided to become a Project Search site, because you need different partners, right? So in the state of Tennessee, Vocational Rehabilitation funds it. So they're one of the partners. Then you have to have the school system involved. So in our case, it's Hamilton County Schools. That's because our headquarters are in Hamilton County in Chattanooga. And then you need the business. And so that's, you know, you need a large employer, because to your point, they have to do three rotations through the school year, because they no longer go to the classroom in their school building. Every single day they will go to that host company, and they will have, like, I don't know, 45 minutes or an hour in the morning, just reviewing what their day is going to be like. And then they go and work, and then they come back and they debrief at the end of the day. But they also have supports. They're not called job coaches, but for those of you familiar, you know, they work somewhat like a job coach. And so that's a provider agency. So that's another entity. So you have in Tennessee, you have Vocational Rehabilitation, the host company, the school system, and a provider agency. And there's literally has to be a legal agreement between those four entities. So this is not an easy thing to put together. So I was on the team that represented the host company side of it. And there were three of us. And we worked with the leaders from those other three entities that I mentioned. And it took us a year and a half to get everything in place that we needed, because there's a lot that goes into it, so much that it's an entire podcast episode just talking about the program, right? And so we worked a year and a half. Obviously you have to start at the beginning of the school year, and we launched it and where we were. So one of the challenges in year one was we didn't have departments banging it on our door to participate, right? Because whether we like it or not, look, I don't like to shame anybody. Everybody has bias. There is not a single person listening to this episode that doesn't have some form of bias somewhere. And I have an entire training that proves that, that I've done with people. And sometimes I have people that raise their hands and say, I'm not biased. And I go through a few exercises, and then they're like, oh my gosh, I am biased. Everybody is. And so they, you know, when you're not exposed to people, or you're not exposed to thoughts, then you know, you just form your own, or what's been told to you. So anyway, so we didn't have departments banging down the door. So we would have directors or VPs that were like, you're doing this in your department, right? So the people weren't enthusiastic about it, right? And so I personally did like working with disability training and across the board, because I gave out evaluations after it. It really helped everybody, because it was like, one, you're not a babysitter. Two, these people are here to work, right? Like if they're not going to work, then you need to, or if they're showing up late, then there are consequences like that, just like there are for everybody else. You know, if you're having issues, then you need to talk to them, or you need to talk to their, you know, their skills trainer or whatever it is, right? And so it's just a lot of like what we went, and then we talked about the logistics of accommodations, and you know, and the word accommodations is even scary to some people. But sometimes an accommodation is just like what cubicle they sit in, or what floor they work on, or you know, getting you know a screen. A certain type of screen for their computer. You know, it doesn't have to be these really intense interventions. And so so we went through that. After year one of that, we did have departments breaking down the door. So we more than doubled in the number because the interns were so amazing, and the departments that were working with them were like just bragging about them all the time. And so the next year two of Project Search at our company, we had such an explosion of interest from all departments, and we still did that training about how to work with people with disabilities. And so that's why, you know, to your point, I have a little different perspective because I helped build it inside of our company. And then we have, you know, we would meet like every month or every other month to all the groups, all the representatives from those four different entities to like, what can we do to be better? How are things going? And all of those things to make sure things were moving smoothly. And then, you know, through all of that, Susie Rutkowski, who was one of the co-founders, and I really, we just became friends. Like right now, I have like moved away from Project Search. There's other people that are overseeing it for us. But her and I still get on Zoom calls, like, you know, 2-3 times a year, like literally just to talk to each other. So, yeah, so we've become a little bit more than business partners, so to speak.
I'm not sure if this was a previous conversation we had or not. What is the minimum number of employees that your company needs to have in order to start the project? What advice would you have for, like, I'm in a rural area, right? What advice would you have for, because vocational rehab has a hard time sourcing employers that are wanting to take on students or persons with disabilities. How do we get the wheels turning in a little town?
Yeah, it's a challenge. Like to your point, you have to be a certain size. You have to be able to offer 3 rotations at least. And you want more because you want people, like anything else, you want people to be doing something that's meaningful to them and that they're interested in. My son just went through an internship he was invited to that was abroad, right? He just graduated from Middle Tennessee State University with a degree in aerospace. And there's this very specific thing he wants to do in his career. And so when they reached out to him, it was a program that they connected you with different companies, right? He said, I'm only going to go if you can put me in something that's close to what I'm interested in, right? And so again, this is normal, right? Like if I'm interested in, I don't know, editing audio, I don't want to go work somewhere where I'm being an accountant, right? And so many times with individuals with disabilities, we're like, well, this is what's available to you, so this is where you go, right? It is ridiculous. As if they should just be grateful that, you know, we're allowing them to do something. And so that's the whole reason why you need as many departments or opportunities, because even one department can have completely different opportunities in it, right? But, you know, different opportunities to do different skill sets so that those students can say, this is what I want to do. This is the department I want to work in. This is the type I want to do because that's what I'm interested in, or that's what I'm interested in learning about. And so as far as like a, you know, a rural area, yeah, it's a challenge. There are some bigger, you know, companies that are in rural areas. And to be honest, you know, there's one managed care organization in Tennessee that isn't local to Tennessee. Right. So they do the program, you know, I work for Employment Community First Choices is what it's called. So they're another managed care organization, and they don't have that number of people that you're mentioning. And so they had such a desire to do something with students with disabilities that they created their own internship. And so maybe that's what it is. You know, what's wonderful, what we learn so much from the disability community is how adaptive they are, right? This adaptive way of thinking and moving. And so all credit to that managed care organization that they were like, we're not big enough to be a Project Search site. We've been told that, we know that. And so let's create something else. That's not as intense, but still gives students an opportunity to come and experience work with us. And it may not be all day and it may not be every day, but it's something, right? And so that may be something, but then you're talking about a company that they just internally have to have a strong desire to be inclusive in that way.
Naveen, I think that speaks to an earlier point you made that youth or persons with disabilities have had to be natural problem solvers. So yep. You're right. That definitely speaks to that adaptability. I would like to ask one final question. And October is National Disability Employment Awareness Month. And with your vast and varied career in this field, how have you seen change occur? I'm really interested to hear about your perspective.
Yeah, it's a part of the narrative now. It's spoken of a lot more than it used to be. A perfect example, we have a conference that we host every year on diversity and inclusion. When I first started, which was 7 years ago, there were no topics on disability at all. And like, this is where this was my point that like diversity wasn't a part of the, disability wasn't a part of the diversity discussion. And so last year, the keynote speaker was talking about disability issues. So we went from having not even a breakout session to having the keynote speaker, which was this global VP from Nike, who came in to talk about disability, employing individuals with disability. And so that's one way. And there's an organization called Disability In. And if you look at them, they just constantly grow and grow and grow. And they have something called a Disability Inclusion Index, which is this really intensive screening of your company from every level, from your hiring practices to your facility accessibility to your website accessibility. Like it takes a while in many departments to complete this assessment. And then they award this company was, a disability leader in inclusion and things like that. And if you go to their website, it's companies like, Disney and ESPN and Facebook. It's like these really big companies, but it's growing and growing every single year. There's more companies that are going through this assessment because they themselves want to make sure that they're as inclusive to people with disabilities as possible. And another thing I think companies are realizing, and really I think the world needs to realize, because this is something that I think a lot of people don't think about, is the majority of people that have disabilities, it's not visible, right? So we think of somebody that, they have very physical signs. Like you said, like your son, we were talking before we started recording, and I know you have a son that uses a wheelchair when he has to go long distances. And so obviously people look at him and know that he has some type of disability, but the majority of people, you look at them and you have no clue that they have a disability. And so companies are becoming far more aware that, we have people that need accommodations that when we look at them, we have no idea, right? And that's okay. And that's normal. And we have to support them and let them feel comfortable enough. You have to build a culture that lets them feel comfortable enough to ask for an accommodation, right? Even if it's like you have an anxiety, you have issues with anxiety, and it could be as small as, I know that we always keep our cameras on during meetings, but I'm feeling really anxious. And if it's okay, I would like to turn my camera off so that I can stand up and walk around and, you know, whatever they need to do to take care of themselves. And having a supervisor that says that is absolutely fine. You do what you have to do to take care of yourself. So turn your camera off, right? That's why I get back to where I said earlier, not everything is this big ask that people have around accommodations. And so I just think it's a much bigger part of the conversation now. I think companies value this work a lot more than they did. But let's be honest, we have a long way to go, right? And if you go state by state, we have some states that are far ahead of other states. And so we're trying to impact each other. We really are. Like, if you're a state that's doing really good work, we're trying to work and bring other states up, and vice versa. Even I think Tennessee does a really good job in a lot of areas, but we're always reaching out to other states to go, what are you doing? Like, how do you have these outcomes that are so good so that they can lift us up? So anyway, I feel like I talked more than anybody you've ever interviewed. So I apologize.
Navi, are there any closing remarks that you would like to leave us with before we sign off today?
I mean, your listeners are probably a lot of advocates. And so, all I say to advocates is we all have a lot to learn. And I think when we approach people in our advocacy from the space of, this person doesn't know, and believe it or not, there's a lot I don't know. So one of the reasons I started my podcast is because I have a lot of experience with the severe and persistent mental illness and with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And there are a million other disabilities that I knew nothing about, right? And so I wanted to speak to those individuals and share their stories and things that they're working towards as well. And so that would be my closing remark, is that whenever you're advocating, always going with your heart full of love, and know that the person, ignorance is not a sin. All of us are ignorant to something. And so our job is just to educate and to guide and to, help people just see things that they didn't see before.
Well, thank you so, so much for your time, and enjoy the rest of your Labor Day weekend.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening along on the podcast today. Be sure to check out the robust catalog of podcasts at the Landscape Podcast, as well as check out episode 89 on the Raising Kellen podcast, and episode 1, season 1, and episode 17, season 2 on the Landscape podcast to find out more about Project Search. I would highly appreciate you leaving a rate and review on your podcast player, as well as sharing this episode. Until we see you guys the next time, as always, remember, get to the top of your mountain. This is Marsh Naidu, signing off.